processor, the computer processor. And in this talk, I will refer to memory with CPU caches, main memory DRAM, and disk. And as you know, the performance of a computer is measured by how fast data and problems are solved, actually. So, this is eventually defined by how fast the processor processes data. And in order to maximize the speed of the processor, we need to maximize the speed of the memory. And this optimal performance will happen with both the speed of the CPU and the memory system at the same. I like to see this as the following, like as a work in a production lane, a factory production lane. And in this case, the worker will be the processor, and in this case, the bread will be memory data. The thing here is that the speed of the processor is actually limited by the speed of the bread. The processor might start grabbing 3 or 4 breads at a time, or it could be prefetching breads from a bit ahead of the line. But at the end, in overall, the speed is defined by the speed of the memory in this case. So we need memories that match the speed of the processor. As an example, if we use a single memory type feeding instructions from data to a processor at current processor speed, and we put all data in this memory device, we would need a computer costing $10 million, which is unaffordable for most people, I guess. But luckily, there is this principle called locality, which is based on the idea that as humans and therefore as computers, as programs, we treat and solve problems in pieces. So at any moment in time, there is some piece that we're working on, and that's called locality. Some data is smaller than another at some period of time. And computer manufacturers use this for a basic optimization, which is called caching. And the idea is that you put this hot data, the data that you're currently using in some fast memory device matching the CPU processor, and putting all the other data in some slower device, expecting that you will actually use it sometime and move it into the fast memory device. And the computers have evolved into a hierarchy of these caches, where a level of this hierarchy is the cache for a memory level immediately below. And this is the typical memory hierarchy of a nowadays computer, which is a CPU, which is fed directly by CPU caches, which are typically on static RAM. Then this is fed by the main memory, which is usually on dynamic RAM. And finally, the storage, which is usually this. And the basic point to note here is that the different speeds between two levels is from 10 to 10,000 times faster. And this highlights the fact that we need to choose wisely what blocks to put on a cache. It's very important to choose them wisely, because if you don't capture correctly the current blocks that are hot, that have been used by an application, you can miss and you can end up waiting 10,000 or 1,000 times more than you should. And turns out this, first, we call this the policy in charge of picking blocks to put on cache. We call it a cache policy. And it turns out that cache policies haven't changed much in the last 3 decades. And they basically do the following. They divide all data in blocks of similar sizes. And then you sort them by some metric of importance. For example, you sort it by recency or frequency or a combination. And then you cache the top n blocks of these sorted leaves, where n is the size of the cache. And there are really a lot of possible metrics, and that's what makes a cache special. For example, if you use recency, that will be LRU. If you use frequency, that will be LFU. Combination will be ARC or 2LRU. There are hundreds of different types of caches, but at the end, they're all doing the same. They're all following these 3 basic steps. And this is an example. For example, if you use recency on the caches, you will be implementing LRU, which is the basic, the most used replacement, the most used cache policy, and it's used almost by default on these two levels on the CPU caches and main memory. And as I said, it hasn't changed in decades. But since then, computing has changed. Nowadays, because of virtualization and server consolidation, there are hundreds or thousands of processes sharing the same caches. As an example, this is from VMware data. The Florida hospital recently, a couple of months ago, consolidated more than 200 machines into 23 physical hosts. That would give a consolidation of 11 to 1. So you have 11 more consolidation than before. You have 11 more processes sharing the caches than before. And
which hospital?
It's called Florida Hospital. Actually, I think it's in Tampa, but I'm not sure. So what are the problems of this consolidation for typical caches? The first problem is that because you have too many processes maybe doing the same things, you have duplicated content in caches. The second problem is that as you are sharing caches, you need to precisely estimate the requirement of a process in terms of caching. If you didn't know the requirements, you can end up overestimating and over-provisioning caches. You give more cache than it actually needs. Or you don't give enough cache space and processes can be fighting for cache and actually hurting each other's performance. And the last problem is contention, which is precisely that as I'll show with data later, when multiple processes are sharing a cache, they can interfere with each other and end up wasting cache space. Specifically for each one of the problems, I'm giving a small example. So for duplicated content, we measure the amount of duplicated blocks in a buffer cache, that's a cache of the DRAM level, for two web servers running in virtual machines. And we found that almost for every block, there is a duplicated block. So there is a ratio of duplication of 2 to 1. So that means that half of the blocks are just garbage. It's just duplicated data that you need to remove.
So this duplicated data is due to what?
To excuse me?
This, why is there duplicated content?
Oh, because these two web servers are using the same OS and same web servers. These two examples, this example is for the online department machine, you know, the Moodle server, and a machine called Web Research, which I think is hosting the web pages of researchers, of students, and at a specific moment in time, we found that amount of duplication. So it's real, serious. Second problem, as I said, is over-provisioning, and the third one was contention, and the effect of this contention is wasted space in caches, which we observe increases linearly with the number of workloads sharing the cache. So this is my thesis statement. We propose basically solving these three problems. Improving the state of the art in caching by first eliminating duplication in caches and therefore improving caching efficiency. Second, we propose having a model of applications cache usage across the whole memory hierarchy and the effects of uncontention as wastage. And finally, solving these wastage, try to reduce it by cache partitioning and isolation of workloads.
The example you mentioned just now is duplication in memory.
Yeah, it was for a buffer cache.
You're talking about duplication in cache.
That duplication was at the buffer cache level.
In DRAM?
Yeah, in DRAM.
So are you focusing on the memory, the duplication in memory,
No, for several of these, I'm focusing on different parts of the hierarchy, but I will specify which ones. Yeah.
The first bullet is still referring to the memory.
Yes, but there are some things I want to generalize for the whole, for any cache.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'll divide the rest of this talk by these three goals of my thesis statement. First, removing duplication. Second, cache modeling. And finally, contention reduction.
So here, just to clarify, the cache is broadly defined.
Yes, exactly.
So both CPU cache, processor cache, and the memory cache.
Exactly. Yes, even SSD caches.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not talking with caches in general.
And also, is contention because of duplication, or is contention for independent of duplication?
Independent of duplication. Yeah.
So if it's independent, why is okay? Actually, but it's not for the same data item. It's just contention for the cache.
Yes, for contention for the cache. Yes.
I think he's going to give more insight into why that contention occurs.
Yes.
Yes.
So starting with the first bullet. So why removing duplication will help performance? So I mean, basic question we want to make is if we deduplicate content and we access this unique content, will those accesses be more frequent than accessing this block by location? And second, will these accesses to the same content be closer in time than accessing blocks? And we answered these first two questions using some traces we got, some production traces we got from FIU servers, and we measured frequency and reuse distance. And
because
in this case,
can you go back a little bit? Can you tell what you mean by content and what you mean by location?
Go ahead. Okay. Okay, let's move. So let's say you have all the address space of all the data. You have all the disks laid down in a flat line. This will be the location of a block. But let's say this block has the same content as this one. So I can address this, either one of these two blocks, by some content.
So what would be the medium of that addressing?
So you could use hashes, for example. Instead of using the address of a block, the location of a block, you could use the hash of a block. So that was the experiment, comparing those two. And at the end, the result of the comparison would be how it's better to use this deduplicated cache compared to a regular cache.
Can you go back to that slide that you were talking about?
Is that?
Yes.
This content is just more frequent than location.
What does that mean? Use more frequently for what?
You mean this one?
Yes.
Okay. So the idea is that let's say you have your content, you cache the duplicate. So you can actually address all the blocks by a simpler identifier, will be the hash, right?
The content.
So I'm comparing that addressing mode to location mode. And by doing that, what I'm comparing is the performance of a deduplicated cache versus a regular cache.
So what does this sentence mean? If you have performance, if content is just more frequently than location, what does this sentence mean?
That the frequency of accesses to specific content is higher than the frequency of accesses to locations.
So is this sort of like accessing a value versus the address?
Exactly.
Sort of that. Using, say, let's say, I mean, and getting down to very basic levels, but that's the difference you're talking about?
Yes.
And the same content is used more frequently than the same location.
So I measured these with traces I got here. I mean, storage data coming and going from the storage to the DRAM.
But again, I mean, that distinction is only going to be important for some applications or some kinds of servers, not for all. How universal is that distinction?
You mean you're asking me if you can see duplication of content.
Is it going to be dependent on the nature of the application?
Oh, yes, definitely. But what I'm saying is that in consolidated environments where you have many machines, it's more likely that you will have duplicated processes, duplicated content.
So, Dr. Carter, just a quick thing. I think maybe one way to answer that question is also is that if you do duplicate destination and caches, does that actually hurt?
Right.
So as opposed to, so let's say it's a workload where duplication doesn't buy you much, or there's no duplication, does your caching scheme actually perform worse than a location-based one?
Yeah. So what you're saying is that you could have duplication, but at the end you're not using those duplicated blocks, so it doesn't make any difference.
So or even simpler, there is no duplication at all. So, and you're doing content addressing. Is that bad?
Yeah,
well,
that's,
it cannot be worse than location addressing.
Yeah, so that's I guess, so somebody just asked this question.
Yeah.
So
you can have the same content in the same location, but you cannot have multiple locations on the same content.
Right.
So addressing by content will be equal or better than addressing by location.
Again, here you're talking about the blocks in disk, right? Here.
In this, for this thing I'm measuring, in this specific case, for the example, it's in disk.
In this.
Yeah.
Then you're saying that workloads don't exhibit any locality in their access, in address locality. There is no address locality in
No, there is address locality, but what I'm saying is that locality of content could be equal or higher. I mean, is equal or higher.
If you can show the data that will
okay.
Clarify
what. So in these cases, we have three workloads. These homes is all the home directories of the people in my lab. This net server is a department web server, and this web VM is two VMs sharing the same machine. So in this figure, I'm plotting the number of hits, comparing sector and content addressing. And hits is divided in reads, writes, and combined reads and writes. So let's see an example. Let's see this one, for example. So here you see that content in blue is much more frequent than the sector in red. So content is used more frequently than sectors, than others.
Why is that?
Because there is a lot of duplication. First, it's more likely that you will hit something that's duplicated. And yeah.
Duplication is an independent property. You're saying you're addressing using content versus addressing using location.
Yes.
That's independent of whether there's duplication or not. Right?
Well, no, because if there was no duplication, this would be the same.
What you're saying is that in the card you have two different blocks with the same content.
Yes.
And since they're duplicated, each one is receiving different hits from various applications, right?
Yes.
So you're counting how many hits each block is receiving. And since you eliminate the duplication, all the hits are going to the same block.
That's how we have seen it, yeah.
Which is why you have higher hits when
yes.
you have duplication.
Yes.
But I think in your system, it will be this duplicated content will really help the performance if you can catch those blocks. If you cannot catch those blocks and if it's on disk and you are duplicating those disks using content address storage, I think it will actually degrade performance.
Oh yeah, this is just motivating data. Later I'll show some actual results of after implementing this on a real cache.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But even this, I mean, you can think of this as, because these are accesses to disk, so you need to bring all that data into memory, right? So you bring twice, in this case, I don't know, how many times more data into memory if you address by location versus if you address by content. And if you know that something is already in the cache because it has the same content, then you can even eliminate requests that are going to disk.
Okay.
Besides reducing the size of the cache that you need. Because if you're doing by location, then you would have to get that additional block and also store it in cache. When in fact these two blocks are exactly the same content. And so those are some of the benefits.
But this will last, only show the frequency, not the.
This is the frequency.
Not the distance.
And now,
yeah.
Is we use distances, which is defined as the amount of unique accesses you have between access to the same content, that's for use distance of content, and the unique accesses between the same location, that's reuse access for location. And here I'm plotting reuse distance for the same workloads and dividing in read and write. And as you see here in all cases, the reuse distance for addresses per sector is higher. That means that you use content more closer in time. So that means if you cache something as content, you can discard it faster from the cache, making space for other stuff.
What are the units of sector and content here? I mean, how big is the sector?
Here is 4Ks. Everything's 4Ks.
Content is also 4Ks?
Yeah, everything's 4Ks, yeah.
Why would you have less hits in a block when you address the block by its content as opposed to its memory address?
No, just a reuse.
This is reuse business.
No, but in the previous
this is for writes, and this was, we saw this especially for journal file systems. So in a journal file system, you have a portion of the disk, of the memory, which is, will be the log that you, you know, you access frequently the same, because it's circular, you access the same locations with different content. It's interesting. You have a log, and you're reusing, because it's circular, when you don't have space, you start from the beginning again, right? It's circular.
I see, yes.
So you're reusing the same locations with different data. So that's why for writes, especially for this case, which you are using a journal file system, you see that.
So are you saying for writes, location addressing is better for that workload?
Yes.
But that means that in the cache, then you will have two blocks dedicated to the same block in disk, isn't it?
No, you can still eliminate it. You have that block in the cache. Mm-hmm. Once it's changed its value, you should, you know, change the value of the block in your cache, right? Otherwise, it would be inconsistent.
So then I was thinking that, I guess you can solve this by doing some kind of two-level addressing where you first look for the location and then look for the content.
Actually, you have to do that because files point to specific blocks of data in location.
Maybe you have a slide that would clarify this. You have one, right?
Yes.
Sorry if I further, just two small comments. One is that I believe sector typically refers to block size.
Excuse me again?
Sector refers to the disk sector size.
Yes.
But here you're talking about page size.
Despite
the call is block, I believe.
I guess it will be more clear. Okay. Yeah.
The second thing is, did we use different chunk, right? That is only for temporal locality. How about spatial locality?
Oh yeah, that's just for LRU or something like that, yes.
Okay, that's a major line.
So this is the basic design of the system. For a read, you will translate a location into a hash, and then search this hash on the cache. If you get it, if you have it, you return the content. If you don't have it, you get it from this, and insert this new stuff you got from this into the cache as content hash. And for a write, you get your data, you hash it, and you insert it into the cache. And this is similar to an abstraction proposed before by Quinlan for archival storage, which is called content address storage, which is basically read content and write content. And we are using a similar abstraction, and instead of calling it content address storage, we call it content address caching. But was first introduced by this guy.
Quick question, Ricardo.
Sure.
You are aware of the TPS block that we do, right? As ESN server that comes back page sharing.
Yes. I'll start by the second question. Yeah, I'm assuming hash collisions will never happen. And there are people who share that idea with me, I guess. You could say that it's more likely that the end of the world will come than having a hash collision, so we shouldn't care about it anyway. And for the first question, because of that assumption, we need to have a really, really strong checksum. We use, in this example, in this implementation, we use 32 bits for MD5. And yeah, we pray that that's enough. Excuse me? Yes, I have this in the next slide here, in three slides ahead. Okay, do you want me to talk about it now, or I can leave it for...
We can search it definitely, yeah.
Okay. We implemented this duplicated content cache for Linux, and we tried with the same workers for which I showed data for the motivation figures. And in this case, I'm showing results for an ARC cache, which is a sophisticated kind of cache with mixes recency and frequency of workers. And basically, what we see here in this figure is that for all cases, well, we tried to set two cache sizes, a big one of 200 megs and a small one of 4 megs. And
you mean cache block size?
This is total cache size.
Okay.
In this case, the blocks are 4K. And, well, the basic thing here is that we use, the hit ratio is higher for content address caching in all cases, and by a lot, because this figure is block scaling wide. So content address caching is good.
So why VM? What's the difference between these three workloads?
Okay. WebVM is online. The Moodle machine. Exactly. This one is Cheetah. You know, has all the mails of the department.
Cheetah versus what?
No, it's just Cheetah. Just Cheetah.
It's just a
single virtual machine, but because there is a lot of duplication in mails, you know, spam and forwarding stuff, there is a lot of blocks which have the same.
And homes is the
in homes, it's all the home directories of all the people in my lab.
Okay.
And because we do similar things, there should be a lot of duplication.
Okay, so what's the situation behind the fact that WebVM has a much higher improvement?
Because WebVM was using the exact same OS, the exact same web server. Everything was the same version, so I think that's why.
But in mail, there's a single
OS. In mail, yes, but you don't have, it's a single OS, but you don't have a copy of the same OS.
Right, you don't have duplication.
Yeah, but you have duplication on mails.
I was about to ask a question that's related to that. So, because ESX does the page sharing, and the page sharing is beyond just buffer guide sharing. So, how does what you are doing compared to that? If for virtual machine model already does page sharing, will you still be able to achieve any improvement?
Well, most likely these duplications that we are eliminating, the effects were already duplicated. But we have the advantage here that the duplication that ESX does is just best effort, right? It just scans pages randomly to DRAM and try to locally find some duplication.
I think, I don't know, I didn't look at the source code, but based on the paper, I think it scans whole memory.
No, I think it cannot scan the whole memory.
It can scan the whole memory, but it doesn't because of the performance problem.
Yeah.
Technically,
it can.
Technically, it can.
Yeah, but it doesn't.
It can. You can set the performance, the frequency interval of the scan.
Okay.
Scan interval.
But there's another advantage that you're missing here, which was also brought up during your fast talk, right, towards the end, which is that you can also eliminate IOs, which...
Oh, yeah, yes,
does.
Yes. You say wouldn't know that they... Yes.
Sorry, I don't understand what that means.
That means that, I mean, we know... We might not have the... Okay, let's say we have two sectors, two blocks with the same data.
On disk.
But we don't have the contents in cache. But we have metadata that says that these two blocks have the same data. So, let's say you have two IOs to these two blocks in the queue at that moment. You don't need to make the two IOs, right? You just send it to one. That, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And also, okay, sorry.
Go ahead.
There's no perfect hash algorithm. Okay. So what happens if the end of the world comes? What's going to happen?
Well, if the end of the world comes,
right,
you don't care about hash. Yeah, that's a weakness of this design, and I agree. And for
but
now,
there are different tactics to deal with that, right? So they don't like
to. Yeah, but if we do that, we couldn't do these IO eliminations, for example, because we don't have the actual data in cache to compare against. We just have their caches, right?
But potentially you can, but you can hear.
Yeah, but if we, yeah, yes.
If you want to say you want to share this to VMware, right? They have to make sure that nothing crashes, right? But they are $1 million to their clients, right? So
okay, I cannot cite to any system, but I'm sure, and I think I heard of some systems that make the assumption that hash collisions won't happen.
Depends on the hash function.
So I think, Ricardo, I think that's a little strong statement there. I think your point is valid. I guess maybe one way to mitigate any risks is to just keep the cache as a for the read only cases. So the minute you do a write, you don't trust your cache.
Yeah,
we
could do that. Yeah.
So for example, there's a bunch of products on the MC, like Celera, for example, it's not archived. So that's entirely based on content and storage. So there is definitely precedent in this
thing. Do you know what checksum function they use?
So they use SHA-160.
Okay. So it's a very large hash. So I think collisions are impossible, really.
Yeah. And just for reference, I think this is actually an idea that VMware just shipped. So it's called link clones in the virtual desktops. We have a product called content-based sync cache, and it does pretty much the same thing.
Oh, I didn't know you have it. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that's cool. So the results I showed here for a content address cache here. And at the end, by doing this stuff, you're reducing accesses here, which are expensive. So I guess your question is, why not do it here?
You may want to tell people what slide you're saying when
you're here. Okay. I'm on slide 25 now.
Ricardo, can I ask you a question, please?
Yeah.
I just remember a work by Satori work.
It's very similar.
They're also doing the same thing, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they're eliminating the duplication.
Yes.
In memory. Did you compare your work with that?
No. But it's very similar.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So the question, the question would be, why not implementing this container cache here? And it would be nice, and I got traces at this level and see that and sort of there is a lot of duplication and potential for container caching. The problem is that using my current design, you would need 10,000 cycles per access to hash, and this will save you access of 100 CPU cycles. So it's not worth it for this design. But it would be nice to come up with something that doesn't require so expensive hashing. And
well, if your iteration increases by a factor of more than 100, then it does make sense.
Yes, that's true. Yes. But I guess that's too optimistic. But I don't know. Could be.
So, along the same lines, so suppose you put in a level of complete main memory and storage, like for example, fixed edge memory or cache or whatever, the order of magnitude of the latency from main memory to such devices is not the same as if it were to go to magnetic media. Does that change the equation somehow?
Oh yeah, I remember the numbers. You have an access, let's say, to an SSD of, 100 microseconds. Hashing a 4K block in a 2 gigahertz machine took something like 60 or 70 microseconds. So we are a bit better than the actual access. In that case, it could help.
So actually, it's kind of a little bit worrisome, right? I mean, most of the hardware guys are
Oh yeah, yeah, that's true. So then you won't use it here. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. 20 microseconds?
Yeah, they change memory and this thing. And thanks to Nana Intel's SSDs, they're aiming for 8 latencies of around 20 microseconds. You have less than 10 microseconds in fact.
Okay. Cool. So continue with the talk now.
So when you completely remove the buffer cache management in Office system to use your own?
No.
So this goes back to my previous question. How about prefetching? You stick to the advantage of spatial locality.
Yeah, you won't have a special locality in E4 content. You are removing special locality.
But I mean, I see these as complementary to what you're doing. I mean, you could still do location address prefetching. I mean, just because, you know, addressing by content is good for the cache doesn't mean you shouldn't do location address anything, right? I mean, I don't think you're claiming that.
No, I'm not claiming that. And actually, you know, you could deduplicate this content at the storage backend. But if you did that, you would remove a special locality. So we remove the duplication at the caches and leave the original structure as it was, so you can use it for sequential accesses and prefetching.
Yeah, but you can do other things. I remember Jorge or maybe Luis talked, right? You did something to improve special locality.
Oh yeah, you could. Yeah, maybe you could.
Yeah, I think that complementary with this.
Yes.
Because special locality is important.
Yes.
Sometimes
yeah.
It's even more important than
company.
Okay.
That's a long discussion.
Yeah. So now the second goal, which is modeling cache usage and contention. So let's say we have a set of applications, different applications, and we have two servers. What an administrator and a scheduler would want is some compact representation of the cache requirements of these applications, so you can compare them against the cache space that these servers have, or you could do operations like aggregation of these representations, so you can know, for example, what would be the resulting cache requirement of having application 2 and application 4 in the same cache, and most likely these won't be a simple arithmetic sum, there will be something more, some contention effects resulting in some wasted cache space. So this is what we want. We want a representation of cache usage and aggregation for these representations. So as an example, let's say we have this application. It's a loop where we walk through the elements of an array A, and we get the sum of all the elements. So the question is, how much memory do we need for this workload across the hierarchy? Well, we can see that the element you need cache space for the elements you are reusing. So you will need space on the first level cache for I, for N, and for the sum. So you need 3 words for this, and then you need space in memory, let's say for the executable, for the binary of this application. So you need this 400K for the executable. And a way of seeing these requirements is a representation is a miss rate curve. A miss rate curve is a figure of miss rate versus cache size. And in this case, I'm plotting the miss rate curve for this application. And we're resulting in something like this. You have two, we call it knees, and you have a first knee representing these 3 words requirements. That means that as you increase the size of the cache from 0, starting from 0, you have a lot of misses because you don't have space for I or N or sum. And then as you give them these 3 words, you're okay, you reduce your misses. And as you increase, you then decrease the cache, the misses, because you have now space for the securable. So we base our model on these MRCs, and we represent these knees as a tree. Where each flat point after the knee is a leaf of the tree, In this case, we have two leads, one representing the 3 words and another one representing the 500K. So this is the compact representation we wanted for cache requirements. Now with this, you could then allocate memory in the hierarchy. For example, if you knew that you have a knee, at 100 megabytes, you can say this application will use 100 megabytes of memory. The same for first level CPU caches.
Regardless, so you're telling that many applications exhibit that kind of knee curve, knee
yes.
Mercy curve?
Yeah.
Okay.
So now a small experiment. We want to see disaggregation property that we want for this workflow and the representation of the tree. So we got traces at this level, all the accesses between the CPU and the CPU caches, and then we use these traces and we run them through a cache sink layer, and then in this case we're plotting the MRC for different cache slices for two applications, BT and FT, and BT and FT running together. These are applications of the NAS benchmark. So we have the MRCs, and the interesting thing here in this figure, by the way, we're on slide 37, is that the knees, the sum of this position of the knees, is equal to the sum of the knee of the aggregated workload, and that gives us the nice property we wanted for aggregating trees, which in this case you will have this knee at 1 megabyte, this knee at 9, and this knee at 10. So you can have this aggregation, which is 1 plus 9 equals 10. And that's nice, that aggregation you wanted, but just after that, for some applications, you have some extra cache space, which we call wastage. In this example, we have two workloads, the web server workloads I was referring at the beginning, and these are A and B. And then I ran A and B together, combined. I just saw that the knee for the first one was 155, the knee for the second 251. If you add them, you will have 406. So that means that you would expect that if you run these two together, you would need 400 megs for this application in order not to miss anymore. But turns out that when you run together, you have an extra space, which we call wastage. In this case, this wastage is 25 megs of completely wasted space that nobody should be using, space that nobody is using.
What's the reason for wastage?
I have an example later for the intuition between this, and actually we're not sure. We have some examples that can give intuition of why, but we still don't have a generalized and bulletproof, you know.
Imagine the cache is full associative, and there should be no wastage.
There is. I'll show you an example.
Okay.
Yep. So the third bullet, reducing contention. So if, let's say, this 25 megs was constant, that would be fine. We could just model it and live with the 25 megs of wastage. But the problem is that it turns out that this wastage increases with the number of workloads and increases as a percentage linearly with the number of workloads. So as you are consolidating workloads into machines, it's not enough to just model it. We want to actually reduce it. Because having 10% of just wasted space for 8 workloads is unacceptable, I think. In this case, I'm plotting wastage for some different kinds of replacement, LRU, LFU, and different type of migrations. On demand will be a typical cache where you have to have the cache, the block in the cache before you can use it. And a periodic migration would be something like an external cache, like an SSD, where you can access the block directly on the external cache before you have it on the cache. So One way of solving this wastage is partitioning the cache. So instead of having a single sorted list of elements like in traditional unified cache, now we'll have one per workload. So you have the cache partition in two spaces, partition one and two in this case. So the question is how much space to give to each partition. And let me show you how this is done visually. Let's say you have two workloads, two VMs, guess one, guess two, and these are DMRCs of the two VMs. As you can see, guess one requires a bit more of cache space in order to not to need to request S in this case, S half. Just for seeing it easier, let's flip the second one. It was like this, now it's like that. And we put them together. And now you can see, if you add up these two functions, you can see the sum of the mistakes. And if that was the function you want to minimize, it's just a matter of finding the lowest point in this function, which is the red line, which is the sum of the mistakes. In this case, the minimum would correspond to giving half of the cache to each workload. And as simple as that seems, this problem was proved to be NP-hard. And then, because it's NP-hard, several researchers proposed some approximation algorithms for solving it. And based on a technique which is just getting the convex, the convex fold of the MRCs, so you can smooth them. And by smoothing, you can then, you can then have a nice body, smooth, but you can just walk and have a greedy algorithm finding the minimum. And, well, turns out that this convex hull approach is the only approach people have been used. For more than 9 researchers and lots of papers that basically use this same approach minor modification for this approach, and they use them for CPU and buffer caches. And it's basically doing this, smoothing the functions, the MRCs, and then have a greedy algorithm to find a close to optimal minimum. As you can see, if you didn't smooth them, you can have these local minimums. So it's nice to smooth them, but doing this in working makes a very strong assumption, which was the requests are of the same size. And let me show you why. By the way, I mean, the convex hull approach was used for these two levels. At these two levels, the requests are of the same size, one line. But at this level, you can have a request of one page or 1,000 pages. And that makes a huge difference. And I'll show you the difference with an example. Let's say you have a workload which is accessing a million blocks randomly. So here is the MRC of that workload. As you increase the size of the cache to 1 million pages, you have a nice linear decrease in misses. But now let's say we have a slightly different workload where instead of having requests of one, we have requests of 64 blocks, of 64 cache blocks. Then you'll get this concave curve. And that's because as you increase the size of a block for a specific size, as you increase the size of a request for a specific cache size, you decrease the chances of hitting the cache. It's like if you have a cache of, let's say, 500 megs, and you have requests of 500 megs, it's very unlikely that you will hit. That's the intuition. So this shows also the problem with the convex hull approach, which is that the convex hull approach would treat these two curves as the same curve. They both have the same convex curve. And that brings a problem, because now if the convex hull approach gives this amount of cash, you will expect a 0.5 of miss rate, but actually you will get a 0.8 of miss rate, so this is a log error. And for our memory caches, this having large requests is very, very common. So we implemented this partitioning cache in the ESX hypervisor, and we used an SSD cache, which is just a cache between the main memory and the storage using SSD, which is a fast disk. And we did partitioning based on virtual machines. Instead of workloads, we partitioned the cache one partition per virtual machine. And
when you talk about large requests, isn't it also possible that large requests are also very local, have high utility?
It's likely, but I don't know. I could check. I don't know. Yeah, I have to think about the implications of that. So.
Because that's something that could affect your analysis quite a bit.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I have to think about it. So this is how we get the optimal, well, close to optimal partitioning. We use full MRCs. We don't smooth them. We use the full MRCs as they are. And they apply a probabilistic search that works in to that tries to find that tries to tries as much combinations as possible in a smart way. In this case, we use a simulated annealing for that. And remember that this problem is empty hard, so you don't have the optimal. So these are the results for one experiment we did with this partitioned cache. In this case, we have a cache of 6 gigabytes on SSD. And
so also, even if you use simulated annealing for each combination, don't you have to evaluate it? And how do you evaluate it?
Oh, well, you have the predicted MRCs. So let's say you give this VM this amount, this VM this amount, well, you just add up the message, right? Yeah, a state for the simulated annealing problem would be just a specific partition, and we have the predicted MRCs. So again, the results of this experiment: rebooting 28 virtual desktops. In this case, we used aging LFU, which is just LFU with a bit of LRU. In this case, we're comparing the partitioned case, which is the one we proposed, compared to a traditional unified cache. And here we see that the partitioned one has, in average, a reboot time of 34 seconds compared to 44 seconds for the global one. And this reduction in time was attributed to reducing wastage. This was increasing wastage, was wasting space, and was having more misses, which at the end decreases the throughput and increases the execution time and increases the boot time.
So how is this SSD cache implemented?
ESX provide a framework for adding, they call it filters, at the block layer, more or less like the virtual disk layer. So you can add a filter to a specific virtual disk and say all the blocks, all the requests will go to this disk or to this SSD. You can interact with that.
Do you have a change in the source code of ESX?
Yeah, not here. Well, I think we have it here.
Yes. So, do you have a change in source code?
Oh, yes.
It's part of the hypervisor?
Excuse me? Yeah, the ESX hypervisor, yeah.
So you have a writer, there's a feature called filter that you can use to implement.
Feature?
No. What is this? What is this for feature that you are, what is this based on in the hypervisor?
It's called viscosity filters.
So you can derive all the water disks, the health of the water disks through this filter?
Yes, exactly, yes.
So this is specifically to ESX?
It's specifically to ESX, yeah.
Okay. And so go back to the question about the wastage here. We made the transition between the previous component of this one. You said this would have reduced wastage?
Again, sorry?
Did you go back to the end of the second section?
End of the second section.
Yeah, I think you're almost done with that topic. Wastage, right? So here then you say you want to reduce the wastage.
Yes.
By petition retention.
Yes.
But that was not explained. How?
Why does partitioning eliminate wastage?
Okay.
And also, my original question, what's the intuition behind
it? Yeah, I'll show you an example.
Yeah, good.
Okay. Let's say you have two workers, A and B. And the axes of A are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, or like that. The axes of B are X, 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 X. Okay, let's say we run these two together as A plus B, and the resulting trace of axes is X, 1, 2, X, 3, 4, X, like that. And now let's say we have LRU as cash. If you had LRU as a cash, how much cash would you give to process A? You need just one block of cash, right? In order to not miss. They'll not be using anything.
Wait.
Yeah.
Because everyone is a miss. Yeah.
Everything is a miss. You'll not be using, so you need one. You need one. For B, you also need one. You'll just be using X and X and X and X. Right? But for A and B, you need three. And tell you what. You have these, right? Sorry.
That's right. An eraser over there. That thing over there is an eraser.
This an eraser?
Yes.
Just what?
Yeah. No, I think it's a sign of the eraser. Sorry, you pulled out that.
Ah, okay.
That's strange.
So I'll draw the stack of electronic.
Because
now,
between
the reference
stacks, you need three pages.
Yeah. You want me to write the stack of these?
Okay, let's write the stack.
You access
so A? I think that's pretty obvious.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you need three. So the idea is that if you partition this cache and give this guy one and this guy one, you will need two. But if you put them together, you need three. So partitioning is doing the trick.
So in other words, you're saying that the replacement of the eviction algorithm should be acting within, so for example, in your scenario, each cache eviction should operate within a partition.
The things that wastage occur because some blocks, some elements of some application, the one that's wasting space, are getting more important than blocks of the other application that's being interfered. And that makes the blocks of the application interfered being evicted when they shouldn't be.
But you, the link is independent of the replacement algorithm.
No, it depends on the replacement. In this case, the miss rate curve is for LFU.
If you base it on an optimal replacement algorithm.
Oh yeah, in an optimal it won't happen. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. You know. Yeah, that's true. In an optimal replacement, you won't have wastage.
Yeah. I mean, also there's trade-off here because. This example, you're assuming you already know the future. So if the petition is wrong, and the petition is wrong, then you may need to more utilizing the test.
If the MRC is wrong.
Yes. Yes.
So there's still a trade-off there.
Yeah.
How reliable are your MRCs?
Well, you get the MRC from some period in time, you're assuming that the MRC will be the same for the next period in time. So you never know, right?
Yeah, so that's why you have to build a system with real workloads and evaluate it.
Exactly, yes.
And that's as close to being certain as you can be.
Yeah.
Well, but since this part of your presentation is about modeling the usage, it is a valid question to ask how good your predictions are.
Yeah, and actually, as part of my remaining work, I want to formally prove that this thing will happen for any replacement, and it will be larger than zero, and it will increase linear. And we have some intuition, some ideas of how to prove that. And that's what I would like to conclude.
It can only be any scheme that doesn't know the future.
Yes, and I would want to generalize this to any scheme that has this unified sorting list. You know, this unified cache I was talking at the beginning. But that's my remaining words, so I'm not sure. So now we are on slide 54, the status of my dissertation. So we implemented this content address cache in a system called IU deduplication, IU dedupe. We already published it, we have nice results, and the system is running. Then for the modeling, cache usage and contention, we have some initial results which I want to expand. And we call this model ERSS, effective useset size. We published this in Performance 2010. And then we have some results of this based on this. The thing is that we observe that this wastage thing had a large effect in energy consumption of CPUs. So we tried to model the wastage in terms of watts. And at the end, we realized it was because of misses to the L2 caches. And at the end, we were treating the same problem, but in a different context. And this paper was the one that, you know, showed us the existence of this wastage thing effect. And finally, reducing cache contention to partitioning. We implemented the system and we wrote a paper called Partitioning SSD Caching. And we submitted and hopefully get accepted someday. So, by the way, I mean, we're done with this, we're not done with this. So I'll expand on this. We have some results about this model, about the construction, because we need to build MRCs at all levels of the hierarchy. So we first start by having estimations of MRCs for the CPU caches and some techniques for estimating them. We had some results, we published those results. Then about the modeling, we have some initial models for individual applications, but the cache contention as wastage is right now just empirical modeling and works for LRU only, and the aggregation of trees is incomplete and it's also empirical. So I want this to be the remaining work of my dissertation. And basically, I would like to generalize this wastage and formally prove that wastage applies to any unified cache policy. I want to define what's a unified cache policy, define wastage, depending on where, you know, wastage can occur at several caches in the hierarchy. So
aggregation of trees was what trees?
Aggregation of trees was this thing. You know, each tree is a representation of the cache requirements of one application, and I want to have a representation that you can aggregate. You can say this application and this application will result in this, and then you can use this with, you know, safely as the requirements of both applications. And as you can see, this aggregation has to include wastage. Yeah. And finally, prove that these wastage will increase linearly with the number of workloads. So basically, what I want to say, what I want to prove is that any traditional task replacement policy, as fancy as you want it to be, will always have these fundamental problems, and they will always have the possibility of leading to wastage space. And I think this is true, but I have to prove it. The
or disprove it.
Excuse me?
Or disprove.
Or disprove, yeah. Yeah. Ah, it's true. Yeah.
I like the confidence.
Yeah. Finally, you know, the tree aggregation is incomplete. For example, what happens if you have a tree with fewer elements than another one? What? How do you aggregate these two? I don't know. Okay, so to end, this is the list of my publications, and the ones in a box are the publications related to this dissertation. And my collaborators for all these papers were, which I want to thank, Raju, Akshat from IBM, Ali and Murali from VMware. And finally, I'd like to thank my committee for being here, and Murali for waking up so early, and all my lab mates. Thanks. And these are the milestones I want to, you know, achieve. For January, I'd like to have these tree aggregation figured out, and for July, all the wastage modeling of the formal proofs. And I plan to graduate on August, the latest. So this is my point. Thank you.
Can you go back to the list of publications? Because I'm sure there'll be some questions related.
Hey, can I ask a question now?
Sure, go ahead.
So I'm having a little difficulty in combining the two different aspects, like the duplication, the reduced elimination aspects, and the cache partitioning. In some sense, these two things do, they have sort of an opposite effect, right? Like if you do truly cache partitioning, and if you now introduce duplication, aren't you actually introducing more duplication by virtual partition?
Yes. And yeah, actually that should be an extra bullet in my to-do list, which is how to mix these two together. That's definitely true, yeah. I haven't thought much about it, but
yeah, I think that's a very, very
yeah, that's a very valid.
Because your thesis combines all of these different techniques.
Yes.
It's important to address how they would work together or not work together with each other.
Okay. Yes, that's true. I haven't thought much about it, but that's something I should address. Yes.
Any other questions for Ricardo? The floor is open. Anyone can ask questions at this point.
Did you have questions, Deepak? That was not something to see.
And he was able to answer all your questions.
Yeah.
Okay, so if there are no questions from the audience, I think we'll move into a closed room session with the committee members today and the coverage. Let's wait for people to leave. Session for asking Ricardo some questions that you might not want to ask with everyone present. So yes, if there are any questions.
You know, from a Harvard point of view, at the beginning, when a sort of collaboration to the slash on a proposal, I have difficulty understanding, because if you tell me that your main memory is your cache, I will tell you you're wrong. It's your cache present. You cannot define that like that. Your main memory is memory, and you have disk, you have addition. And cache only is what is cache? Cache is anything that resides on the core. That's only cache. You can call it cache. But then, from your point of view, that is it's then being tremendously exemplified that everything is cache now, because
that's my point of view.
I have
yeah.
to think my traditional way of thinking, then you want to understand that what you're really doing.
Clarify. I think you mean by that.
Okay.
I think that's one of the first things I told him to put in his dissertation, what exactly he meant by memory and what he meant by cache.
Okay.
Because I think you're going after a very unconventional view on these established definitions, right? So it's important to justify why you're defining it that way. And before you justify, you have to clarify how exactly you're defining these terms, or
okay.
rather expanding the scope of definition.
Okay. Because, for example, if you think about main memory, most of the data you have on main memory was on disk before.
No, that's why we define the whole memory hurry up.
Yeah, so if it was on disk before, it's a cache, right?
Yeah, we understand, just you need to really define it.
Yeah, okay.
Because we are seeing cache people typically better define it than the processor cache.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Your point of view of that thing is called cache.
Okay.
I appreciated the fact that you, brought up what were the different points in the hierarchy that you did various things very
okay.
clearly. I think that was very good. And if you could, you reuse some of these slides where you have the hierarchy and say, and not say here, but, mark a line and then refer to it in your dissertation and say, this is what we are talking about for this chapter or let's say
okay.
for this subsection. I think that would be very useful as well. Because I think having those pictures, made things much clearer than they would otherwise be. If you just kept using the term cache and memory, people might be, five people might be thinking five different things, right?
Okay.
So it's good to put that in the right perspective, even in your dissertation.
But at the end, I wanted my dissertation to be something more general, right? It's just that I'm focusing on some level, just the dear details. The dirty details of my implementation. It's just that I cannot have an implementation for all caches at once. I tried that at one level, but I want conclusions that apply to any cache. That's what I would like.
You need to find that, we look at the thesis statement, right? You just say cache, and we don't explain what you mean by cache. The statement, that should be, really precisely defined.
Okay.
Right?
So okay.
Define, clarify.
I actually like the fact that the statement is one statement as opposed to multiple statements where you expand everything.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, but it's using definitions.
Yeah. Okay.
Particularly for something that is ambiguous.
I think that appears, if I'm not mistaken, in the beginning of the introduction or the abstract, even right where the definitions of cache and memory are laid out in the beginning.
And then at the beginning in the document, you said that the cache are designed basically based on one single rule, one single characteristic in its temporal locality.
Yes. There is also special locality. Yeah.
Put both of them, then you obviously focus on the temporal locality.
Yes.
The cache is not working on both of the categories.
Okay, that's true.
Right. And then for your overall scheme, right, you have three levels, three different designs, and actually for the first level design, as you already show, content-based regression with hash function, right? That only, I think that works at the disk level. And then if you want to say this works at a higher level of cache, I would say this one. This because it's expensive, it's tremendously expensive. You access your level one cycle, you access your level two, that's in 10 cycles. How can you do a hash function within 10 cycles? It's not possible.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
But that doesn't make it really important. You might not have to use hash functions, right? Let's say you have some fast piece of circuit that makes a comparison between a line and a line.
The thing is, unless you have hardware support, do the hash.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's a very good point. If you can, I'm not saying that you need to build the hardware support or even simulate it or anything, but address that aspect in your dissertation.
Yeah.
Okay.
Identify things that could be moved to hardware, which would
yes.
really have an impact. So
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Surround the work, I think it's a maritime work that has done a lot of stuff, and even now regarding the wastage, we discussed that, but I still have a fundamental, I think the wastage is a tremendous, is causing by, you said that, okay, wastage increase in the
increase
of the workload, right? But on the other hand, what's the property of cash if you increase the workload, you increase your conflict, and then your conflict and misery should contribute to it, or maybe their factor contributes.
So how do you define the conflict misses?
It means that two cash lines go to a single patient. That's your conflict.
Yeah, because so what you're saying is that as you increase the number of workloads and keep the size of the cache constant, then you have more misses.
You have more misses. Then you need to increase your cache size to scatter it out so that you can decrease your conflict.
Right, but I think Ricardo is assuming fully associated.
Yeah, I'm assuming fully associated cache.
No, even fully associated cache, right? Fully associated cache, you should look at the first step in method, that still belongs to the conflict limitation. Because you have 10 bits for the others. The only thing is, okay, I don't like look at the last 4 bits, I look at the first 6 bits. If first the 6 bit define which set I go to, then within this set I have multiple blocks, that's when I have written that I go to.
Okay, so that's set associated, not?
Yeah, that's set associated. But the thing is for fully associative, then the thing is you're still limited by the size of your set.
But I'm sure there are some models already for that kind of wastage, right? Because of associativity, conflict misses, right?
But also, so then for your wastage scheme, that which level you are?
Well,
at the disk level, you're the main memory level, or are you at that on-chip type level? Exactly.
Well, I'm at the general cache.
From this drive, which is even below main memory.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
Even below main memory.
Yes.
And that's when you use your
Okay. So this adds another point to my wastage discussion. I would like to see what happens with associative caching. Yes. And try it hard after in the.
So what I'm saying is different levels provided with different characteristics that you can take advantage of. It may not be as simple as okay, I have this thing I can drag using to the upper level or to the lower level
So here when I'm talking about a unified cache policy, it would be great to include policies at this higher level which has associativity. So I need to be careful about this
So I was looking at the introduction. I don't think the cache is clearly defined.
I also looked at the introduction.
You have cache in your title, right? Improving caches. The first thing people will ask is what we mean by cache. You have it in your introduction. And the statement is also, without linkage to verbal, you can also include like parentheses and cache. Meaning that the processor cache, memory, buffer cache, disk cache.
Okay.
Also, I think that you may want to put the associated cache in the title because it looks like all your everything, like the entire work only applies to central caches.
Yeah. Well, I'll see what happens with other types of caches, and I would like to generalize even those. I haven't thought about
so
those.
So far, whatever you're presenting.
Oh yeah, it's only full associated.
So I think it really ought to be in the title then.
Okay. Unless I prove something for those two.
Or clarify it in the beginning, right? In the introduction or something like that.
We're only showing how to improve associated.
That's true.
A really comment about title is I think the consolidated environment is kind of vague. If by that you mean
virtualized systems or?
Yeah, but I was also thinking about consolidated storage.
Storage caching.
Storage caching.
That's the big word is the environment.
Okay.
Yeah, visualization is okay. So the environment, what do you mean by environment? What do you mean? The environment is really, you know, it's a
big word. So I could say virtualization and storage consolidation.
Or under consolidation, perhaps, to get out the word environment.
Yes.
Okay.
Does this work only for virtualized environment?
No, it doesn't have to be. So if you have a shared storage, the workloads that are accessing the shared storage may or may not be virtualized.
For the first piece of work, duplicate of data.
Yeah.
So that is more valid at the disk level than at the upper level, level one, level two. Right?
Yeah, I think without hardware support, like you pointed out, it might be difficult.
Not only regarding that. You think about it. It's okay. The reason why they duplicate is for if it's for a single program, then why you want to duplicate it? You don't want. You can just okay. This is data I want, and I put it in one location. I access it. I maximize my locality in the cache. That's it.
Right.
Unless you have a different process, you want to test the same data, you don't want that, then you distribute it so everybody has their own copy, then it become a distributed management.
Right.
So or if it's shared more memory model, then everybody wants to test it, then you need to and all those synchronizations. But other than that, I don't see that, but it's just at level one, level two, that's why you want to do that, the content base.
Well, I'm thinking, for instance, let's say you're running a bunch of web servers, they're all running Apache, right? And there is a core Apache processing engine, right? Which is a portion of the executable that all of them use, and that sits in the L2 or L3 cache, right? Could possibly be deduplicated. That's the executable component of the workload, right? I'm not sure, but these are the kinds of things that may be explored in the lower or levels of the cache, closer to CPU.
Because when you're moving more upper lower, it's more closely, you are in CPU, you have to see hardware design and consideration.
Yes.
And then when you are at a lower level, actually, it's like what you're working on is pure software based, that you can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
Because you don't really need to take the hardware specifications into consideration. But when you move up, you have to.
Yes.
Into it
would be interesting to see if there is any opportunity at all for deduplication at lower levels.
Yes.
For that, you need content traces.
We have them.
Content CPU traces?
Yes, we have them.
I thought we had only address.
Oh, yeah, but we have somewhere we just dumped the register value just in case.
Okay. I think that may be even more interesting than deduplication of memory, because caches are even more precious than memory, right?
Yeah. I don't know. I was thinking L3 caches. I don't know what the access latency is, but I'm sure it's more than 100 cycles.
Level three.
What is the access latency?
I'm not sure.
Less than 100 seconds.
Because L3, the thing is L3 is still on chip.
Okay. Oh, okay.
But I mean,
the other thing you can see that your customer memory can be more than that.
Yes.
Yeah, can be more. Can be like 500 too much. You can be even like in the worst case, 1,000 seconds. No problem.
Okay.
I have a question about that pathological example you had for wastage. I think it's a great example, but it's still a pathological example. The question is, what happens on the average? What happens in practice? And also, I mean, you're really mixing two very different kinds of access patterns. One where the even though it's, it needs only one one block, the cache, it's really reusing, so the frequency is high, whereas the other one also still uses only one, but the frequency is very is the other extreme. So in a way, maybe the problem is because you're mixing two very different kinds of access patterns. So maybe consolidation, when it happens, should be more careful. So you could turn the question into something else where consolidation should be more careful rather than your partition. So I mean, there are lots of questions it raises. So what, I would be interested in knowing what happens on the average.
So
I think WASTX really has lots of interesting questions to ask.
Okay. Yeah.
And maybe you can, you know, just as an example, show the figure that we made for the paper that we submitted recently, right, where we tried to explain wastage. I think that gives a more, let's say, generalization of this into any replacement algorithm, right?
So in this example, A will be A there.
Yeah.
B will be the X. And the idea is that so the problem is that some elements of A are getting more important according to the replacement metric, which there will be recency, than some elements of B. And
what is WS and IS and CS?
WS of A is the working set of A. Is the set of elements of A that are actually helping A. In this case, it would be empty. So then that's
it. Makes sense to have your A map to B over there. Right?
A will be B, exactly. Yeah, so this is X. This is X, and B. Actually, it's not making sense. You know, it's not working right with that example.
Well, in that example, it doesn't work. But I mean, as a general description, I mean, talk about, you know, if you use any replacement metric, that if you have MRCs such that your working set or a portion of the MRC that that is corresponding to a certain working set size actually becomes less important than a portion of the MRC or elements from the MRC that are not supposed to be in the cache, right? So that's the IS of B is the interference set of the other workload, which should not be cached, but transitorily it's becoming more important than some of the elements in the working set of A, and that leads to displacement of those elements in A.
Yeah, what he's saying in this example is that at this moment in time, one is more important than X because one is more recent.
So one and X, they're arguments on their code.
Excuse me?
They're arguments on their code.
Addresses, yes. Sadly. So because of one, X gets shipped according to this metric, which is recency, and because of that shift, you need one more space.
Is WASTX happen before the, so WASTX basically happen when you run two workloads together, but before your plan partition.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Once you partition, if you do it right, there should be no WASTX.
So, what she's saying is the WASTX is still becomes a confliction between the two, even though you're doing free associative, because you don't know that you still need to do it.
Yes. So that's the point. I think he's saying even fully associated caches have that problem.
Yeah.
No, but also if you throw into the mix what Ming suggested earlier, the effect of prefetching, clearly prefetching will have a huge impact on ACE performance.
Yes.
So there are just lots of aspects here, and I think wastage is still an interesting question.
So I think I'll have to start with the basic version of this problem, which is, for a start, no associativity and no prefetching.
Yes.
With that, I'm happy at least for a start.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, certainly you need to start there, right?
Yeah.
No.
The question is that enough for...
Sorry, full associative. Yes.
Yeah, fully associative.
Full associative.
And no prefetch.
No prefetch.
I have a few general comments for the container, for the future defense and the finalization.
Okay.
On the screen, I have a page number.
Okay.
I cannot refer, cannot find what I want to find with the page number. And I think you need to extend essentially the real work and the future work.
Okay.
The real work should really be a comprehensive literature survey of the prior art. Right? So I think you have some discussion, but it's really condensed for this.
Yeah.
It should be, I think it should be essentially. Extended, and in my personal view, I think it'd be better to appear in the beginning rather than in the end. So
okay.
People can be aware of the prior art before they appreciate your contribution. And also, the future work, if you only have a half a page, so in your final presentation, you can present your vision, your plan. You know, you don't become a researcher at the VMware, you don't do a lot of interesting work. So. What is plan? What is your plan? Right? Based on your presentation, what is your vision to the future? Right? So that I think we can offer interesting discussions there. We'll talk about the clarification and the expectations. Regarding your presentation, you know, this is not just a presentation, it's a defense. You defend yourself. During your presentation, you got the feeling that sometimes you felt not that confident about what you're doing. Okay? Sometimes people ask about a piece of radio work, it's similar. But you should define yourself.
Right?
It may be related, but you're good in some aspects. And also,
okay.
That's not work, don't use my word. That's your word, right? You have to use it. Some scenarios, you have to use it because this is the best.
Okay.
You have to defend yourself. This is defense.
Okay.
So I mean, defense doesn't mean that you have to say, well, you've got to use my work, right? You can't just say that. You have to clearly articulate what is the scope of applicability, right? What are the assumptions, right? And then say, well, under some assumption, this work is useful, right? That you should be able to defend.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's otherwise what the point.
What's the point?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that also implies your understanding of your contribution, right? If you cannot clearly understand where you contribute, then you cannot convince anybody else.
Yeah.
Right? So maybe that should be reflecting your final dissertation too.
Okay. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I think that's more to do with your presentation style. I think. You have to engage the audience, and when someone asks you questions, then you have to sort of give that importance, and at the same time, present your point of view to say, okay, here is how I think, my work actually is useful, and addresses maybe not specifically the things that you're talking about, but some other things which are also important, right? So if you feel that your work doesn't apply to something, you can't say, well, don't use it. You have to say, okay, well, if your workload were this, then, and I can show you that this is real, my work becomes applicable, right?
Okay.
Right, also really the work, so, I think during the presentation, there was some suggestion on the work. It probably covered it, right? It covered the ethics. It covered the work that I should mention.
Yes.
probably you need to elaborate on comparison.
Okay.
Elaborate.
Yeah, I think your dissertation can certainly, you know, benefit from more expanding more on the related work, because often in papers, you know, you have limited space, so you have to really, you know, condense the discussion of related work, but here, there is no such limitation. So you can be able to elaborate much more on the related work.
Okay.
And the introduction didn't even mention memory wall. That's what you're listening. You should bring it up.
Memory what?
Wall.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they give it a name.
You didn't even mention it once.
Yeah, okay. Actually, I like that name. Okay.
So, Giri, do you see, I mean, I'm glad that you're on the committee, because it seems like he wants to do some formal work.
So, yeah, in fact, that was one of my questions, because you use the word proof.
Vaguely.
On the physics side, you say empirical only, so I wasn't quite sure whether your proof meant you're going to prove it empirically or you're going to prove it theoretically.
No. Before I did it empirically. Now I want to do it theoretically.
Oh, I see. Because the empirical part wasn't right. Okay.
Yeah. That's what I did before, but I think we can do something.
So, yeah, you know, I was going to ask you how you're going to approach it, but if it's sort of an open question, that would be interesting.
But I think it's a valid question. I mean, what are your initial thoughts? I mean, at this point, you should have some idea as to how you're going to go about the theoretical aspect of what you're planning to do, right?
I should. Everything is based on intuition, and my intuition is based on the fact that I've been trying many, but really many workloads and trying different replacements, you know, by hand, and I always see it. So in my mind, I already generalize it.
You always find some interference causing
it. Exactly, yes.
That's what you're saying.
That's what I'm saying. But that's not an enough proof. I mean, I cannot try exhaustively every possible combination. And I don't know, I really don't know what tools to use, to be honest, for proving this. There must be some tools or tricks or something, I don't know, but it's there, I know it, that's the thing.
I mean, from a theoretical standpoint, this type of stuff interesting,
yeah,
I guess.
This example is great. I think it's a great example. We should definitely take it somewhere and see what sort of things come out of it.
Yeah, I think, I mean, certainly, getting guidance from you can help you out a lot.
We should talk about this more. And the other thing also where you are dealing with these MRCs, right? You call it MRC square. You said that the previous work does some smoothing on it.
Yes.
Which kind of was
helped.
I find that interesting. I don't really know what you mean by smoothing.
They find the convex mirror.
So this is when they're adding MRCs.
After adding, they do a smoothing stage because they find the minimum point of that curve.
I see. So it's more. My question is not well framed there, but we need to think about this a little bit more. So you're saying you've done away with those smoothing. Instead, you're looking at the raw MRCs and then trying to use these proportions to figure out how much to allocate to each one of these guys.
Exactly.
And then
see
how it behaves.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah, so that also is theoretically quite interesting, because again, you're assuming some input profiles and then you're trying to see how to do allocations. So this is resource allocation in the end.
Yes.
And you have how it behaves for a certain amount of resource, and then you would like to find an optimal resource allocation for a combination of these. So theoretically, that also is a very interesting problem. Using simulated annealing is what we call a soft computing approach, where you just try and look in all directions and hope that something will give you a reasonable solution. But theoretically, it's still very interesting to know what are the limits of what you can do with it.
Okay.
So both of those I saw as very interesting. Then the other question I have is about multi-level cache. I mean, most of these machines have L1, L2, L3. When you talk about cache, you're just talking about what happens as a one-level cache.
Yes.
So if you assume, let's say, two-level cache, are any of these questions different? Does it have an impact on anything that you're saying? I don't know.
I
see this. Maybe you can comment on this.
Yeah, maybe that's an extra aspect I should be considering. But now that I have so many extra things, I need to focus on which, what are the simplifications I have to make.
But often if you were asked, so you had sort of three parts to your work, repeat those. So I guess you had, so you had the duplication issue.
Yes.
Make a difference whether you have one or two levels.
I don't know.
And contention also.
Yeah.
You make a difference whether there are one or two levels.
Yeah.
I think these are, certainly we've identified a good set of questions that perhaps you don't need to answer entirely, but you have to have, discuss them.
It would definitely be a good idea to have it just a paragraph on these issues.
Okay. Yeah.
I think the associativity question, this question on hierarchies, but I think more importantly, I would highly recommend that you, meet up with Giri and get guidance from him for the theoretical aspects of, it seems like most of what you're going to do next is theoretical.
Yes. I want to conclude something.
Yeah, that's why I wish Mario had been here. I reminded him again. It looks like he also doesn't wake up before now.
Okay.
It's something the three of us should talk about.
Okay. Yeah.
And, the practical side, right? There's also some debate on why the petition is good or bad for Vestige. I think there's some interesting there. Because Ducati is working on something related to cement water, the bubble level patch for consolidated water machines. And we're doing this for a cloud company. And they are going to, they think a non-position tax is good because they don't think the workload is easily predictable. And as a result, then we cannot really, efficiently position the tax space. So it might be better just like everybody share the tax space.
Well, something there is that there are some replacement algorithms that tend to waste space more than others.
Yeah.
The worst I found is LRU. The best I found is ARC. So you should go with ARC.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's good to know. I would like to help him talk to more before you disappear.
Yeah.
They live together.
Yeah.
I have two more points I've forgotten. One was you say early on that the duplication is roughly 2:1 in one example.
Yes.
Again, there was a modal example that you gave. It's possible that also is pathological because there's a lot of common usage there. I still don't have a sense of how big a problem duplication is. I don't think you've sold that motivation well enough.
Okay.
It's one third of your work that you're presenting
here.
I never was sold on the idea that duplication is a huge problem.
I think it would be good to present, let's say, summary data for all the workloads that you actually worked with. And also, in addition, to go back to Chen's point is, if we can do the same thing at lower levels of the cache and see if there is duplication there, I think that, even just the analysis can go into your dissertation as well.
Yeah, I mean, one slide with four different applications or four different situations would make a huge difference.
Okay.
You've got to sell why duplication is a problem.
I think that's not the scope that is, you need to justify the selection of your benchmark. Mm-hmm. Right. So now you say that I choose three, I choose Moodle, I choose Home, I choose the image.
Yeah,
right?
That's a very convenient
choice. That is an easy convenient choice.
Yes.
But does it represent him or not?
I don't know why you say it's convenient. I mean, it's not that we had like 20 and we picked three. We just had those three, right?
Yeah, but...
And also, I think they are very different kinds of workloads. I don't think they are the same.
Yeah.
So, that's the other thing. I mean, besides being, being able to defend, you shouldn't, undersell your work, right? I think that you seem to sort of shy away from from confrontation by underselling your work.
But in other cases, you make confident statements saying that this is true.
Yeah, but that's not my word. That's how data is, right?
Yeah, but at the same time, I mean, you should be able to defend why using those three workloads is a reasonable thing to do, right? And not, it's not just convenient or maybe a very picky way of picking or selective choice of workloads.
Yeah, you should have a sentence saying why you picked those three.
Yeah.
Why
okay.
The fact that they're sufficiently different, the fact that one may be,
yeah.
one may have a certain characteristic, the other doesn't, et cetera.
I didn't pick them to be together by arbitrary. I mean, these two web servers were running together.
Sure.
They were already running together, and the home servers are already going running together. So, that's true. I haven't picked them to be that way. Yeah.
The real question is, can you let them do them actually online?
Yes.
And they can do it online with this to be average? And what is the, how frequently, how long will it take to join the MRC and do it, update it, and then
all you need is to look at the access pattern. The MRC will sort of fall into place.
Yeah, but the access patterns change over time.
There is an algorithm called matching.
But when you say online, you mean that you're looking at a certain past history. So from that, the MRC is fixed.
Yeah, but then the accuracy will depend on that.
Of course.
Yeah.
So the size of the window and the granularity.
Yes.
Yeah, but I think that's an important point. I mean, certainly in your dissertation, when there is a question like this, you should be able to answer that.
How efficiently can you
write
just the MRC?
And also in your write-up or in your final PhD dissertation, you should talk about these things, right? I mean, how easy it is to compute MRC, what is the cost, and in each of these cases, how frequently do you retrain your MRC, and those kinds of questions if you're not already doing that?
But about the MRC history thing, I was looking for research on this and I couldn't find anything. Maybe you know. Let's say you have an MRC, this is for now, and another MRC, this is for last week. I want something to mix these two together so I give more weight to this one. You know what I mean?
You want some kind of a combination of the two.
Exactly. What can I use to do this? Is there something?
And why doesn't the weighted average serve as a simple straw man?
You want the access pattern to generate the some kind of a combination.
Not even easier. Let's say I have these two curves.
Yeah.
And I want to give this curve three more weight and this.
If you start with the trace of the excesses, then you can just use the exponential smoothing, something like that, then generate the MRC. But if you already have the MRC, it becomes more complicated.
Well, I could do it in the middle of the MRC generation.
That's
right.
More than that, just generating some combination MRC, you really want the access pattern that generates the MRC, isn't it?
Yeah.
That may be non-trivial. Or what sort of time scale would you want?
What
sort of time scale the two MRCs have been generated for? It could be several hours.
What is the pocket?
I usually, for these examples, I use the 5 minutes previous window.
So does that mean every 5 minutes you generate
one? Yes.
And
yes.
That means every pharmacy will be reparting with that.
Yes.
And what's the rationale behind that? Like 5 minutes.
I like 5 minutes.
This is a word kind of question. It's cute. I'm not that cute, but
Yeah,
not so good for defense.
you will not escape.
I tried some numbers with basic examples, and 5 minutes seemed to work better.
See, that's much better.
That's
getting
better. Look, it's a trade-off between cost of repartitioning versus what we lost in.
Hello. Murale?
Hey, sorry, I dropped off my
No, don't worry.
So it's a trade-off between cost of repartitioning versus just staying with that with the previous partition.
Yes. But
so the cost of actually moving things around to create that repartition. So you have to factor in those costs. Maybe 5 minutes is reasonable. Maybe it's not. It really depends on how much it takes to repartition.
Right. I think that's going to be one of the potential comments we get back for the submission.
Yeah.
Right. Because we don't really justify that choice very well.
Okay.
The 5 minute choice.
And in fact, Mario has been looking at how to, it's a different context, but how do you find a new solution that's not that different from the previous solution? Because if your new partition is wildly different from the previous solution, then you have to move around a lot of things.
But even that is bad.
It's not so bad. You just wait for it. So if this guy's allocation reduced, when replacement happens, you sort of focus on a smaller set. That's all.
That's part of the catch. You have to wait for it warm up.
So in that sense, it's easier now.
Okay. So if I can summarize, I think there are some.
You may have some questions.
Yes, Murali, do you have any questions? Because we lost you in between. Are there any questions that you have not asked?
No, I just wanted to do a couple of questions. Please go ahead.
Okay, that's it. You're saying that you saw something so offline.
Okay. So I was just about to summarize our feedback to Ricardo. I think, first of all, issues with respect to definitions of memory and cache should be crystal clear in your dissertation and your final PhD defense presentation, right? And then I think Chen had some good points about, what kind of caches are you talking about, fully versus set versus non-associative, right? I think those should be clearly laid out, and if you want to claim something beyond fully associative, then you have to do some additional work.
Yes.
Right? As it stands, you're restricting yourself to fully associative caches.
Okay.
And Giri had some comments about what happens if, for each of the contributions that you have, when you additionally consider that you're looking at a multi-level caching hierarchy, right?
Yes.
As opposed to just focusing on a single level. How does that affect your conclusions, or can you expand the scope of your work to address that? This is not to say that you have to do a complete work in that regard, but at least you should have some reasonable statements to make in that direction, right, in your dissertation and in your defense. Ming had some suggestions about related work, expanding the scope of that, as well as future work, right,
okay,
in the final dissertation. And answering questions, more professionally, I think that's probably the term that I want to use.
Okay.
Right,
but we know each other.
Yeah,
we
know each other. Right, but in the end, we're going to sign our dissertation,
yeah,
right? So that makes it a little bit more
professional.
This is really a practice for something else. So
yeah.
The word, the keyword in Roger's word, summarize is be professional.
Okay.
You know, you are a charming boy, right? But this is the thing, to be professional.
Okay,
yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah, and that is not to say that you cannot crack jokes in your presentation.
Right.
I mean, don't use your answers to specific questions as the opportunity to, crack jokes.
You can use your favorite response first, but then also get to the serious answer.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I think that's okay too.
Okay.
And I think Murali had some suggestions about
mixing the two ideas.
you know, what happens when you mix these together, and
I think that's
does one
yeah.
affect the other and so on. I think that will connect your disconnected pieces in a much better way, right? So I think these are, have I missed anything?
I'll release it.
Yeah, so I'm doing a voice recording of this proposal, so we have everything on record, right? So, anything else that I missed?
One general, final general comment, I think overall this work is fits much better at the disk memory, main memory.
Okay.
It is much more challenging.
Okay. I think
it's not true,
but just experiments could confirm that.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think my suggestion was to try to see what happens, for instance, with deduplication at the cache level. And in the future, who knows? I mean, you guys are designing all kinds of hardware. So if it's possible to do hash computations for, you know.
The thing is, when you begin to do 3D stacking, when you begin to move the memory onto the cache, on top of your core in a 3D architecture, all those things.
Right, so, I mean, yeah, and that's the point of the PhD, right? I mean, you have the flexibility of being very forward-looking in terms of some of your claims. Right. And as long as you qualified by saying that, well, we can't do it today, but it may be possible 5 or 10 years from now. Right?
Yeah.
So yeah, I think you should utilize that opportunity to address some additional possibilities. Okay. So and do we the future work that Ricardo has laid out, is that reasonable? Do we want to make any changes to that?
No, I'm satisfied with that.
How many papers do you see coming out of your future work?
Well, I would like a paper on this wastage modeling thing. Yeah, more of a theoretical kind of paper.
Yeah, it's a different question, you can focus on one thing.
Yes.
Okay, so I think that concludes, doesn't conclude it entirely because the committee still gets to talk a little bit more.
Okay.
But Ricardo gets to leave the room. I'll call you back here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Murali.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay, so.
Yeah.
Our job is to decide whether Ricardo's proposal was sufficiently justified, and whether his plan for dissertation is enough, right, to get a PhD, right? And so I'd like to hear some feedback, and if there are, you know, comments that you would like to give me instead of him.
Yeah, one question I have is about the publications. He has papers in many different conferences. I'm not in this field. I don't really know how they rate against each other. If they had all been in FAST, I wouldn't ask this question, but I don't know how that is. So maybe you can put things in perspective for us.
Right, let me see if I can bring up.
So there's one paper in MassTalks, there's one paper in Performance, one paper in FAST, and one in ICAC.
And close the presentation.
MassTalks is a good 70 conference. The assessment rate, I think, in 10 years, about 30%.
Right. Performance is, I would say, close to top tier because every third year it's the same as Sigmetrics. So Sigmetrics is a top conference. And Performance, I remember the acceptance rate was 17 or 18% when he published his paper. FAST, of course, is the top tier storage conference. He has two papers, but he talked about only one of them.
And ITAC is what?
I think it's the Autonomic Computing Conference. He has two papers there.
Autonomic Computing is top conference.
This is number one. Actually. Yeah. So, I mean, of all my students, I think Ricardo has the best publication.
Yeah.
All right. That's kind of cool.
I was just, he had a very different style compared to the Max Hovey. Hovey is very serious person.
Yes.
And he was, how to say,
has. Tell you, right, so he has his, you know, mental terms, but I'm not saying that he needs to change his job, but he needs to make good use of that, and at the same time, be just like a professional. So
yeah.
If that's something you can work with him.
It's, yeah, I think Ricardo is probably the most difficult to mold for me.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I feel that the only thing that I probably influence is his English skills.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, I won't claim anything more than that. I mean, all the stuff that he does is completely his own creation, right? I would, and I don't know what Murali's opinion is about him. I would be interested in actually finding that, because you got to spend 2 summers with him, I believe. Murali?
Yeah.
I mean, do you think Ricardo is an independent researcher, or you know, do you have any other general comments about his work?
I think the only comment, at least, you know, so I've been back with him quite a bit during his first internship, not as much in the second one. I definitely have no questions as such with respect to this. And the only comment I had from today's presentation, I think he needs to articulate his ideas, his contributions a little bit more. You know, a bunch of these things, like for example, I think there was a very valid question, like why does DPS not help? Yeah.